The Blind Leading on RNIB Connect Radio. As part of RNIB Connect Radio's 20th anniversary, our presenters took part in various activities to help shatter misconceptions around sight loss and what blind and partially sighted people can do. From wrestling to singing to astronomy and beyond, blind professionals and sports people put our staff through their paces, highlighting that people should see the person, not the sight loss.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I'm here in Blair Gallery with Dean Dunbar in his and Rona's kitchen. We've just packed up and we're about to head out prone boarding. So before we head out on the water, can you tell us about your sight loss story?
Okay, so I'm now registered blind, but I started off life with full sight. At the age of 9, I realised I had problems when I couldn't see what the teacher was writing on the blackboard, so off for tests, and at that point I was told that I was registered as partially sighted. But for the next 10 years, they didn't actually know what was wrong with my eyes and came up with all sorts of different things. Eventually, in my late teens, I was told I had rod and cone dystrophy, and basically I've had that ever since. At the age of 27, so that would be 1996, my sight was deteriorating quite rapidly at that point, so I went to the hospital. And at that point, they told me that I was now registered blind, and I've been registered blind since 1996.
And you started extreme sports because you went skydiving and loved it. Can you tell us about that experience?
Absolutely, yeah. I was working at my old blind school down in Exeter, and we needed to raise some funds to buy a camcorder for one of the boarding houses. So a colleague suggested maybe trying skydiving. So we got in touch to do that as a fundraising thing, but I was told because I was registered blind, I would have to do a tandem skydive, which was a bit disappointing. I was hoping to do it all on my own, but I understood the reasons for it. I was strapped to a guy who at one point said, right, let's lean forward, and we fell out of the plane. So I got to enjoy the free fall for the next 25 seconds, totally buzzing off my head and landing on the ground. And by the time I hit the ground, I was thinking, where do I get this next buzz from? Before that, I was very much into sports. At school, I did sports. Then when I left school, probably for about 5-10 years, I didn't do any sports, but then got into football. My sight was deteriorating to the point that I was then chasing people who didn't have the football and taking them down. So I decided it was time to pack that in. Went to do athletics. I was doing well at that. I was selected for the Sydney Paralympics in 2000. But unfortunately, a year and a half before that, I ran into a parked car. Someone had parked where they were told not to. I didn't see it, and I sprinted into the front of it, and my kneecap relocated. So it was time to find a new sport, and it just so happened that was about the same time that I did my tandem skydive. So from then it went from football to athletics and then on to the adrenaline stuff, and I've been doing the adrenaline stuff ever since.
And we're going to be prone boarding today, but that's one of many different sports that you do. Can you give us the list of the different things you've tried?
So far, I think I'm up to about 130, 140 challenges and things that I've done around the world. I've been very lucky to set about 20, I think it's 26 world firsts so far, but a few more in line. But yeah, I mean, I've done everything from abseiling down the UK's highest waterfall to snowboarding to whitewater rafting to stand-up paddleboarding. And due to an injury during the stand-up paddleboarding, that's now got me down onto prone boarding. I injured my foot, so I now lie down on the board to do prone boarding, which looks a lot easier than stand-up paddleboarding, but believe me, it's not.
What are some of the things you're most proud of?
I guess my proudest ones are my world firsts. I've got, like I said, I've got about 26, and not quite, I think about 10 or 11 of those are the first blind person to do something, which is great, but the other ones are purely the first person ever in the world to do. So I'm really chuffed and proud about things like did a stand-up paddleboard trip out to St Kilda. I was the first person and still the only person to paddle the 70 kilometres out into the Atlantic Ocean to get to this small group of islands that I'd been waiting to do for probably about 30 years. I had tried to kayak it about 15 years ago, but that the weather was against us, so it didn't happen. But in 2017, I decided to give it a try on my stand-up paddleboard along with my sighted guide, Patrick Winterton. And we very luckily got good weather and we made the trip out there, and it was absolutely amazing. And that's one of my highlights, I must admit.
And as we were heading our way over to your house, you were telling me that it's not the enjoyment of the sport necessarily that kind of spurs you on. It's the challenge itself.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people, you know, wake up in the morning and say, oh, great, I'm going to the gym today, or I'm going to be training on the water or things like that. And I'm sorry, but I'm a very lazy person. And although I do all the training I need to do, I don't wake up with a jump in my step thinking, great, I'm going to train. I just think, OK, this is one step closer to my challenge. And then I set myself challenges. And once I've done those, I'm then looking for the next one. So I don't know quite what I'm classed as, an adventurer or a sportsman or whatever, but I just keep setting myself goals just to see if I can actually do it. And once I do, then it's time to move on and try the next thing.
And in terms of all of the sports that you've done and the different organisations you've talked to and done activities with, what are some of the misconceptions you've come up against?
I started doing all these adventure sports and extreme sports in 1998. And in those days, it was very common to be turned back. The usual routine would be that I'd phone up a company and say, I'd want to come and do, say, paragliding with you. And they'd say, yep, no problem, we'll book you in. And I said, oh, by the way, I'm registered blind. And like I say, 9 out of 10 people would turn around and say, oh, sorry, we can't have you. And they would either come up with it's against our health insurance regulations or our insurance doesn't cover you. I'm glad to say that over the last 10 or 12 years, that's changed a lot. And now I would say most of the times if I phone up a company, most of them will actually say, yeah, let's have a look and see what we can do. If you are blind out there and you want to try something, phone the companies. You may have to phone a couple, but hopefully you won't have to phone 10 to get to the right one.
And as we were packing up, you showed me the Milo and talked about sort of some of the other tips and tricks that you and Rona have figured out.
The Milo is a communication system. It's a hands-free communication system that covers several hundred meters. So I tend to wear mine on my arm and Rona will wear hers around her neck. And it means that when we're out paddling together, we can be chatting to each other, but still be several hundred meters apart. She can then warn me of dangers ahead when I'm out. We don't have to be shoulder to shoulder. In the old days, we used to have to use different comms systems, such as the old-fashioned whistles, which I did a crossing on a stand-up paddleboard from the Scilly Isles to Cornwall. And my friends were using the whistle system back then. One whistle told me to go to 1 o'clock. Two whistles told me to go 11 o'clock. A blast of multiple whistles told me I was bang on course. But we found out that that didn't work too well when at one point they set me off and went off to have a look at some seals and told me just to keep on the course I was on. And they'd direct me if I needed it. And over the next 10 minutes, I was going left and then I was going right and I was going forward. I was following their whistle commands until eventually they caught up with me and they said, what was all the zigzagging about? What was happening there? And I said, well, I was following your directions with the whistle. And we only then worked out that I was actually listening to seagulls who were directing me. So the Milo is a massive step forward from that. With the Milos, it's switched on and it's working as soon as it's switched on. So there's no need to press any buttons or stop your exercise. You can just crack on and do what you're doing. It just gives us that freedom and it gives me a bit of independence.
And they're waterproof.
And as Rona just said, they are waterproof.
Awesome. And we're just about to head out. I'm going to put my wetsuit on and we've got all of the stuff packed in the van. And we're going to head from Blairgowrie to Loch of Clun and get
Clooney
started.
Lock.
Clooney, yeah, Loch. Clooney Loch, not Loch of Clun. Clooney Loch. Perfect. So we're at the side of the loch. And we're just about to get onto the water. Can you kind of describe the prone board?
So the board you're on, it's a gong board, so it's inflatable. Many people have seen the inflatable SUPs that people use to go out on where they're standing on. This is very similar to that. It's about 12 foot long, but it's much narrower. Your normal SUP is about 30 to 32 inches wide. This one here is about 22 inches. It's about 10 inches narrower, so that you can lie down on your front and get your arms access to the water. A wider board would be much harder. Yeah, I think it's red and white. I'm not really sure, but I'm pretty sure it's red and white. And it's a board I've had for quite a few years.
Nice.
And it's a good one to start off with. It's very stable compared to a lot of the hard boards. They tend to be a bit more tippy. So this one's stable, so you should be fine on it. You shouldn't take any rolls on this one. But then again...
I'm wearing a wetsuit just in case.
That's right, so yes.
And can you walk us through the very basics of prone boarding?
Okay, so with prone boarding, there's two positions that you have on the board. The first one and the easiest one that we'll start off with is lying down. So you're lying on your front, you're looking forward towards the front of the board, your feet are flat behind you, and your arms, you're going to bring your arms through the water either in a butterfly stroke, so both arms together, or individually like a front crawl. We can do that for a while, and then if you're feeling confident in that, we can then look at the next position, which is kneeling. This one's a bit more balance is required, it's a bit more tippy, but it's much more efficient in the water. So with that one, you'll be kneeling, leaning forward, and this will be a butterfly stroke, so both arms at the same time scooping through the water to propel yourself forward.
And I'm not going to get too wet, but my hands will be up into their elbows in the water.
Your forearms will get wet, the rest of you is down to your balance.
Yes. I'll see, hopefully I can prevent something over.
Yes.
You were saying the history of prone board, it came from lifeguards in Australia. Australia?
That's correct. Yep. So they started off, they had these boards that they would go out, maybe about 6 foot long boards. They'd paddle out, pick up casualties from the water, either get them to hold on or throw them on the front and paddle them to shore. And I think in their spare time, the lifeguards, when they didn't have anything to do, they'd maybe race each other on these. And before long, we had the lifeguard races that they would do. Maybe up to 200 metres sprints. And then over time, I guess someone's maybe looked at this and said, well, why are we only doing 200 metres? Let's do 500, let's do 1 kilometre. And before you know it, we now have people who are paddling immense distances. There was a guy we saw a couple of years back who did 220 kilometres non-stop in the canals in Holland. And that was in about 40 hours, I think it took him. But that's where it's gone from, you know, 200 metres to 200 kilometres.
Yeah. And where do you feel it most after you've been prone boarding a little while?
I would say that the areas that you're working most is from your shoulder blades up to the back of your skull. So you're looking at your upper back, your shoulder, your neck muscles. They're the ones that will feel it most.
Nice. And we'll be just heading out on the water and then eventually maybe kneeling at some point.
Yeah, that'll be the plan. What we'll do is we'll just paddle along the shore for a little while, just while we build up your confidence, see how you're feeling lying down. And if you feel that you're up to it, we'll maybe have a wee go at kneeling and see what happens.
Sounds good. Okay. Hopefully no capsizing.
Fingers crossed.
So I'm here again in Dean's kitchen, just back from prone boarding, and my arms are very tired, but I'm feeling really good, and it was a lot of fun. How did I do, Dean? How did it go?
You did a lot better than I was expecting. You did very well indeed. Most people who come onto a prone board, they can normally do the basics lying down and rotating their arms and swimming through the water. It's hard work, but most people can do that. I was very surprised that we ended up getting you on your knees, powering along, no problem at all, doing sprint sessions. And even at one point, we took you from the inflatable board, which is kind of the beginner's board, and then put you onto my expedition board, which is definitely a harder board to work on. I was expecting one thing and got something totally different, so well done. You did
absolutely
superb.
Brilliant. Well done, Julia.
Oh, thank you. You guys, Dean, you're a fantastic teacher, and Rona, you were wonderful moral support. I'm very glad I didn't capsize as well. I was expecting that to happen, but it was great. You had talked sort of earlier during the session about how much you love the sort of multi-sensory aspects of prone boarding and being close to the water.
So a few years ago, I used to do the stand-up paddle boarding, as I was saying, and a lot of people, when they're out doing that, they're standing up, they're looking around, they're taking in all the scenery. Obviously, with my eyesight, I'm not able to do that. So, you know, you just paddled along and hoped to keep in the right direction and just ploughed on. But lying down on the board, on the prone boarding, for me, it's much more interesting because I'm lying with my head just, you know, 3 or 4 inches from the water. So I'm getting the sound of the water when the wind comes along and blows over the top of the water, or I'm pulling my arms through the water. You're getting that sound effect, which is really nice to hear that. But also as you change your pace, you know, when you speed up, maybe it gets a bit more splashy because of waves or whatever. That is very exhilarating compared to when I was standing on a board and going through the same conditions.
We went to your local lock and you had lovely names for different bays so that sort of you could tell Rona where we were headed. And you had already been there this morning before we went out again. And no doubt you'll be back later this week because you're training for a longer... Is it a race? Is it an expedition?
No, it's a bit of an expedition. It's a challenge that I set myself many years ago. When I first took up prone boarding, I set myself 3 challenges. I've managed to do one of them, which was to paddle the length of Loch Awe, which is the UK's longest freshwater loch or lake. So I've managed to do that. I've still got 2 waiting, and this is one of them, which is a distance of going to be around about 40 kilometres on the sea. So it's quite a big challenge. So I've got a lot of training to do. So yes, I was on training this morning. And I'll be back on again tomorrow and the day after and then back at the weekend. So I've got a lot of training still to do on Clunie Loch.
And we've had some brownies as a little pick-me-up. What do you kind of normally do after you get back from prone boarding? You were saying you've been doing a bit more yoga to kind of look after your shoulders.
That's it, yeah. I've got to the age now that my shoulders, my back and my hips and my knees and everything's starting to fall apart slowly, especially with the amount of exercise I'm putting them through. So because of that, I have several physio exercises that I spend about 10 to 15 minutes doing for my shoulders and lower back. And then Rona for years has been trying to get me to do yoga, and for years I've been saying no. But then at one of the big races a few years ago, one of the 2 top paddlers just happened to plonk down in the grass right in front of us. And I said to Rona, what's he doing down there? To which she replied, he's doing yoga. That kind of persuaded me that, yeah, maybe it is time to start the yoga. So that is down to Rona and her her persistence sticking with me and pushing at it, and that's what I do now, so yes.
And for people that are listening who maybe think prone boarding sounds fun, but I don't know how I'd get started or whether I'd be able to do it, what would you say to encourage people to try it out?
I guess you've just got to really find whoever's local to you that's doing it. And to be honest, it's still quite a rare sport in, say, I would say the north of England, across the border up here to Scotland. In the whole of Scotland, I know of six of us that do distance prone boarding. Whereas if you go down to the south coast, certainly from Cornwall through to maybe Bournemouth, Dorset, you're looking at this, there's quite a lot of people do prone boarding there. I guess you just have to contact a local centre and say, can I come and do it with you? And if they can't do it, can they suggest someone else? But there's no reason to be nervous. Get yourself out there, find a good company, make sure it's a good one. The good ones are the ones that will probably say to you, yes, we can work something out. We don't know what we're going to do yet, but we will work on it. These are people who are thinking about what they're going to do for you. Those are the companies you want to seek. When you've got those companies, get out and enjoy yourself. You only get one life, make the most of it.
And where can people hear about all of the other amazing, wonderful, crazy things that you do as part of Extreme Dreams?
Right, well, my main blog website is called extremedreams.co.uk. And on there, I've listed pretty much everything I've done since 1998. And all the things I'm doing from now on will all be going on there. There's always updates on extremedreams.co.uk. The other options are to go to my Facebook page, which is Dean Dunbar, Blind and Dangerous. And again, I post a lot of things there as well. So between those two, I'm sure you'll be able to find out what I'm up to.
Amazing. Well, I think I'm very hungry and probably need to drink some water after our prone boarding today.
And I think we need more of those brownies.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Dean Dunbar and Rona Dunbar, for having me over and talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome, Amelia.
It's a pleasure. It'd be nice to meet you.
The Blind Leading on RNIB Connect Radio.